4272 is our telephone number, and we're going to get right to it with our first guest, State Senator Scott Franz. I don't know if you saw, and we've talked about it, the National Review Online story about the state of Connecticut, the blue state of Connecticut, and the mess we are in, but it was a very fascinating read that was posted online yesterday, and we're going to talk about that with Senator Franz from Greenwich, Republican from Greenwich. Senator, welcome to CT on the Hill.
Great to be back. How are you, Dan?
Great, Scott. Scott, this piece here is very interesting. It was written by Stephen Ide. I've interviewed him before. And essentially he writes that there's no way Connecticut is going to grow itself out of this budget mess. What do you say?
You know, I think he has a point there. By the way, everybody is reading this this piece that he wrote, and they're sending it to their friends. It's catching on fire like crazy. So the answer is this, is unfortunately because of nearly two generations of very bad public policy, going to do with a whole lot of things that have depressed our ratings in all of the important categories, especially the business environment, places to live, places to retire, et cetera, et cetera. We put ourselves into a very slow growth to no growth category. The only way that you can overcome a constantly compounding cost structure that increases every year by way too much is to grow in advance or grow faster than your cost structure is. We're growing at about one-third of what our cost structure increases are per year and have been for two decades. It's not a good situation.
You know, I had a broker on from your neck of the woods, the Norwalk area, last week. And I'm sure you're aware that several of these commercial real estate brokers got together and had a round table, and they were talking about how they're having a difficult time attracting business to Connecticut and trying to sell business on Connecticut. And also they said a lot of residences continue to move out of the state, including Fairfield County, and right now the supply is outstripping the demand, and that's hurting the market. That's your neck of the woods. What can you tell our audience about that?
Yeah, it's the feedback I get from literally every broker that I speak to, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be Fairfield County. It can be anywhere in the state these days. There are so many problems that seem to have added up here over the last, you know, 15, 20 years that have affected everything from, you know, the real estate market to businesses and their decisions to locate other places than Connecticut, or in some cases they decide to get out of Connecticut because it's, you know, too difficult a place to do business in.
So getting back to the National Review piece, what it also stated was now the latest move is for Connecticut to try and bail out the cities, that that's going to be the cure-all for the entire state. What do you say to that?
You know, they've been saying this on and off for a long, long time. And the cities, until they get their act together, meaning they need to work on their cost structure, they increase it 5 to 7% per year. You know all the details. Many of your listeners know all the details, and they're just unsustainable until they make their structural reforms. So the state bailing out the cities is going to do nothing for the state's overall economic growth unless they ask for structural change, which they might or might not. They're putting in these sustainability panels in certain municipalities where they think that it is deserved. But so far, the irony is the administration, current administration, can't even get it together at the state level. Why do they think they could do what the municipal leaders are doing better than they could? It's really ironic.
Yeah, it really is. Now, in the piece, Stephen Ide writes that wounds are still raw from General Electric's announcement in January 2016 that it would relocate its corporate headquarters from Fairfield to Boston. So you're down there. Are the wounds still raw?
Yes, they are. They will be raw for a long time to come because we saw this coming from probably 3 to 4 years before they actually took off. Jeff Inmelt is a constituent, still is. He has not moved up to Boston yet, and he made it very clear to me, as well as many, many other people in the legislature, that GE would not take any more of this kind of nonsense, meaning that the state's got to become much more predictable. They've got to stop producing these deficits. They've got to stop increasing taxes, and particularly taxes that affect GE and their employees. They didn't listen to them. They turned a blind eye, and lo and behold, the night of the vote, Jeff was on the email, and we voted for that budget. And the next morning, he sent an email out to every employee in Connecticut, said, we're moving. We're not sure where, but we're moving. Mm. I don't blame him.
Yeah, you mentioned that Jeffrey Immelt is a constituent. He keeps dropping the price of his house, Scott.
I don't mean to laugh, but he's not the Lone Ranger. There are a lot of people in New Canaan and Greenwich and Marianne and Stephen Stanford where they can't sell their house. They've lowered their price, you know, five times, a total of 30-40%, and they still can't sell it. There's very, very little demand.
Now, you mentioned email, but have you talked to Immelt, or did you talk to Immelt during this period when they were saying to the state, you've got to stop going down this path?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, he and also various senior members of the management team came to the Capitol at least twice within, I'm going to say, 3 or 4 days of the vote. So, yeah, they were all over it. They were very serious about it, and I knew that. Other folks knew that. Apparently the governor did not.
How do we get out of this mess?
Well, you know, I get that question every year. I have for the last 8.5 years now, and it gets tougher and tougher. If the majority party had acted much more responsibly going back 8+ years, the answer would be very different, and that would be nip away at the various places where you can create savings in state government. One of the most inefficient sources of services and goods for people is state government. Everything costs a lot more, and you and I know why. So you start to nip away at those costs, get things stabilized, create a lot more predictability so that you're not losing your tax base. That's half the equation here, is that our revenues are drying up, and they have been for, you know, nearly a decade now, because people do not like paying taxes, or they don't have to pay taxes because it moved to Florida or South Carolina. These days, it's going to call for something much more draconian, and I think when we get real about it, we need to effectively go through the equivalent of some sort of an insolvency event. That means bringing everything to a screeching halt, having a higher authority telling us what we can do, what we can't do with respect to getting at the heart of our cost structure, which means opening up contracts, eliminating things like, you know, pension bumping, salary bumping for pension purposes, taking this pension plan and turning it upside down, making it solvent, and turning it into a 401k type defined contribution plan for new employees. It's the only way. If we did that and did it sooner than later, that's how we're going to save the state fiscally.
Define insolvency, because as I understand it, states, unlike municipalities, states cannot declare bankruptcy. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's really a matter of semantics, though. Bankruptcy is insolvency is out of cash. So how do you define it? I would say you define it when there is a fairly catastrophic event, meaning the bond market says no more to Connecticut general obligation bonds because they don't like them, and then we run out of cash. It all boils down to being able to provide the short-term cash to keep the state solvent. And believe it or not, a lot of that comes from bond issuance proceeds for capital projects, and rather than put the money into, you know, UConn's new athletic center, they take the money and pay for today's bills, and they keep the shell game going so that there is enough liquidity in the system that they're still considered solvent by the rating agencies. If the market dries up and they say no more to bonds, or we, in fact, you know, just run out of cash for whatever reason, that's insolvency right there, and that's when we need help, and we would need it fast.
I mean, we're close to that point now, I would think, and yet the governor's out there talking about bonding money for the XL Center, Senator.
Yes. Are you surprised?
No.
Unfortunately, the governor doesn't really understand fiscal affairs all that well. He doesn't understand insolvency issues. He's used to being able to get through all of these, whether he was mayor of Stanford or whether he was governor of the state of Connecticut, he's used to getting through all of these things by the skin of his teeth, because he can always borrow a little more money. He can always bend the rule here, make it look like everything is fine. But he's really not done the people of Connecticut a great service by taking us down this path. And it's not going to end pretty. Hopefully it ends very quickly and we get the state back on track. I mean, you've got four cities anyway that are, you know, essentially insolvent as well. They're all looking to the state for a bailout of some sort. They're not in a position to do so. The state itself cannot even take care of itself from a fiscal point of view. It's ugly.
So let's say these bond rating agencies come forward and say, that's it. You can't borrow anymore. You can't bond any more money in the state of Connecticut. You're essentially insolvent. So even though the state itself cannot declare bankruptcy, what you're saying is that would be the vehicle that would force the public employee unions to the bargaining table and say that the infrastructure has to change?
That's correct. And, you know, if you look at what happened in Puerto Rico and if you look at what happened in Detroit, even though Detroit is not a state, it's a city, but it was 2 million people and we're 3.5-something million people, so we're not too far off in terms of population. And by the way, Detroit went from 2 million people to 840,000 people in about 2.5 months.
That's right.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's like us going down to 1.8 million people in 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. So what happened in both of those cases is they needed outside help. They set up these what they call sustainability panels, which is a euphemism for a bankruptcy court panel or bankruptcy judge, to come in and basically tell the employees what's going to happen to them. They rewrite the contracts. They tell the bondholders what's going to happen to them. Typically, they give them a 20% or 30% haircut, and then they put things back together. Typically, they hire a city manager, or they would hire a statewide manager to deal with the fiscal issues and also work with the administration to work these things out. So it would have to come in from the outside. You know, most likely the federal authorities would be the appropriate ones to do that. And that's how we would get through it.
Do we know of any other state as close to Connecticut's situation?
Yes. Illinois, we give them a really good run for the money. They're number one on a per capita basis in terms of indebtedness per person, in terms of fiscal management per person, the deficit per person, et cetera, et cetera. Illinois is slightly ahead of us, but we're giving them a good run for the money.
So we could actually be in a situation. What would trigger this? You talk about the bond rating agencies. Would it require a governor to actually go to the federal government and say, look it, we're out of money? How would this be sparked?
A couple things can happen. And this is pretty fascinating. In Hartford, they had their credit rating dropped 3 notches by 2 different agencies in 1 day.
Right.
In 1 day. Can that happen to a state? Absolutely. Absolutely it could. And so that would be one event that would cause us to have to seek outside help. The other, you know, as I was mentioning before, is just purely running out of cash, meaning that, you know, we just ran out of cash 1 day, or the market decided not to buy any new issuances from Connecticut of our general obligation bonds, or any bonds for that matter. And so we don't have enough cash for the week to get through, and then they, you know, have to throw their hands up and say, uncle, and maybe go to a bank. They've done this once or twice before. They go to a bank and say, can we borrow, you know, $240 million, whatever the number is, for another 2 weeks until we get things stabilized, and then they do that. I know Illinois has done that before a couple times also. And then after that, then you try to just, you know, get the state back on track, and if you can't, then that's when you go into the, you know, insolvency part or the essentially bankruptcy part.
Wow. So, and again, if you had to guess, how close is Connecticut to that right now?
You know, we bounce off of that invisible barrier like all the time. And thank God there's still an interest in Connecticut state bonds, general obligation bonds, because that's what gets us through these very thin times. It's hard to tell because we always seem to, like Houdini, pull the rabbit out of the hat and pull it off somehow. The rating agencies only look at just a short period of time, and they say, well, they'll make it to the next, you know, quarter or month or whatever, and therefore we'll continue to give them a AA- rating with a negative outlook, which, you know, I think that's pretty generous, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, we always hear about the doomsday clock, so let me phrase the question that way. What time is it on Connecticut's doomsday clock?
You know, it's kind of like always 3 minutes of 12.
Wow.
You know, and we're working hard at the, you know, I don't mean to, you know, make such a negative light on the state, but you know, it's possible to get this ship turned around. We need to do it now. No more waiting 2 years, 4 years down the road, where it's really going to be structurally impossible to make some of these changes because we just, you know, we've lost our tax base to the point where there's no return, et cetera, et cetera.
Senator, we need to legalize pot. We need to add a casino or two and put tolls in, and our problems will be solved, right?
There you go. Listen, I put in about 90 miles each way every day, so 180 total. I'd be the biggest contributor to the state from a toll point of view.
It's crazy. Senator, anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up our interview?
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is this, you know, I don't mean to be so negative about things, and you've got some really, really good people up there working hard to get things back on track. And, you know, stay tuned for the next election in, 21 months or so. If we are allowed to take things over, it'll be painful for a little bit, but we will put this state back on a great track.
Scott, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Dan, and you have a good one.
You too.